And also never forget, because I forget this every time, but then I go in and look in at IMDb and remember that he was the hot dad in what's the DDLJ remake that had Varun and Alia Bhatt in it?
Oh, the skirt one.
Yeah,
The
Humpty
Humpty Sharma?
Sharma. Yeah, and he's the hot dad in that, and I just think that's funny because he's Colonel Luthra, and he's
It
kind of
is
just a guy.
funny.
But anyway, yeah, anyone can be hot
I mean,
if they put their minds to it.
that is so true.
Hotness is an energy
It
as much as
is.
anything else. Welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie, and we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood boys.
Bollywood boys who were secretly childhood best friends all along.
Yeah, and who might have become lovers had life not taken them down separate paths.
Maybe. Although I have to say, I feel like the sexual chemistry between our two leads in War 2, which is our movie for this week, was less pronounced than the
It
sexual
was.
tension between our two leads in the original War. And maybe that was intentional. Maybe the sexual tension in War 1 was arguably unintentional. Who knows? But
I don't know. I do think there was some charged energy between these two at certain points. You know, things get intense, and who can say where that energy originates from, you know?
Whether it's hate or love or
Passion.
desire, yeah, can come
Yeah.
from a lot of different
Friends to
places.
enemies to
I mean,
lovers.
who doesn't love just mash all the tropes in there? So tell me what you thought now on this
So,
sort of partial rewatch of War 2.
I liked it more this time than I did the first time through.
I did too.
That's so good. And my theory about that is, I knew what to expect this time. I wasn't expecting to be blown away. I was not expecting another war. I was like, I'm just here for like the action and the vibes. And it delivered the action and the vibes. And I was actually able to just enjoy the story for the story, not comparing it to war.
I agree. I think going in with the expectations of like, I didn't really enjoy this, so I'm probably not going to enjoy it again, meant that I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. But so yes, I'm glad to hear that you had the same experience.
Yeah, and I'm excited to talk about it. You know, I still would say War was a lot
I
better.
agree.
I think I would watch this again in the future, mostly just because if I'm craving an action-heavy Rithik movie that I don't really have to pay attention to, like I'll just kind of have it on in the background. I feel like that's where this will live in my brain. But I don't think it's a total flop.
I agree with that. Yeah, I could see myself, like, if there were a day in the future where I'm like, I'd like to watch War. And then I would be like, I might as well put War 2 on. Like, that's where I could see it happening.
Exactly.
So
Yeah.
wasn't terrible, wasn't as good as the
Right.
original, but was still a good time.
Yeah, I will say the fantastical nature of physics and what is possible really, really took a stretch in this one. But isn't that kind of what we're here for in these action movies? Like, yes.
I definitely made a note that there's no room for physics in this world. I do think we've gone too far into the CGI world sometimes, where I'm like, this is just so clearly fake that it doesn't even like have the cool impact on me anymore because it's just like I might as well be watching a cartoon. And so, yeah, I think in some ways we've strayed too far from God's light with the CGI. And like, yeah, like
I
a good
agree.
old-fashioned practical effect is sometimes like the most effective way of getting something across. And I do think, again, there's something to be said for like not realistic action in the sense of like gory violence, which has its place in storytelling, but like action that's not so far outside the realm of possibility that you aren't spending the whole movie poking holes in it.
Right.
There's a happy middle ground between those two things where I think the first war and even like Patan lived.
Yeah. There's some absurd stuff, but you're like, oh, it's only a little absurd.
Right. Yeah. Just a little sprinkling on top of absurdity.
Where you can kind of make yourself believe it's possible.
Yeah. Even though you know it's definitely not. Yeah.
Even though you know it's not. But like, a boat. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to get to the boat. Like, we thought we'd watched the most bonkers thing probably to come in this movie when we watched it through most of the way through together. But no. No.
Yeah, no. We didn't know what we were in for.
So, War 2 was written by Aditya Chopra and directed by Ayan Mukherjee, which is fun. And starred, obviously, Hrithik Roshan as Kabir, N.T. Rama Rao Jr. as Vikram / Raghu, Kiara Advani as Kavya, and then Anil Kapoor as Vikrant Kaul. And then we had Luthra. Should we do a shout out to Luthra?
Yeah, shout out to Luthra. R.I.P.
Okay. Yeah, R.I.P. You will be missed. Okay, let's do this. Oh my God. We open in Japan, where it's a snowy night, and there's a bunch of guys sitting around eating dinner with a wolf. A messenger comes running in and tells the head guy that an army has come to assassinate him, and he must leave. The head guy looks at his wolf, who heads out to meet this army. But oh no, it's not an army, it's actually Kabir. And he stares into this wolf's eyes, and through the sheer force of his badassness and masculinity, turns the wolf to his side.
Yeah.
Wild. Just like,
yeah, pure vibes.
Love it. So Kabir walks in with this wolf, and he tells the head guy that no one else is coming. He is the army. He also says, like, I am your death, which there's a lot of, like, intense I statements in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of, like, I am death. I am the darkness. I am the shadows. And I'm like, if you have to say it, I don't believe
Maybe
you.
It's not true. Maybe you need to just embody death as opposed to constantly stating that that's who you are.
Yeah, Vikram the Shadow Daddy.
I don't know that I see that, so it probably, I don't think you can be a shadow daddy if you call yourself a shadow daddy.
See, that's so true.
I think that might be one of the first rules they teach you in shadow daddy school.
Shadow daddy school. I love it. But Kabir says that all the other men can leave, but the head guy says no, they'll stay. And Kabir pulls out his guns, but the other guy says this place is like a shrine and we do not use guns here. So Kabir drops his guns and starts fighting people with swords. Mm-hmm. So cue a lot of him being awesome and super strong and fighting off multiple guys with swords. Kabir fights all these guys, then he runs outside to where the head guy is about to board a helicopter. Two ladies with guns meet Kabir on a rope bridge, and even though they could just shoot him because they've got guns and he's stationary right in front of them, they wait until he cuts the rope bridge. But by that point, they've fallen off, they're dead, and Kabir climbs up the broken bridge as this guy gets into the helicopter. Kabir then uses a grappling hook to catch onto the helicopter, and as the helicopter flies away, he swings himself up and shoots the pilot dead, then drops back to the helipad so that the helicopter crashes, killing the dude. And then Kabir watches everything burn with his new wolf friend.
Yeah, his new pet.
Yeah, so this is the intro. We're like, whoa, this is what Kabir's been up to.
Yeah, welcome to the movie.
Yeah. Kabir meets up with a lady at a club who wires him a bunch of money for killing that guy in Japan. And we learn that he's killed 20 people over the past 15 months.
Which,
that's a lot of people.
I guess, I don't know if they're counting the, like, 16 people we just saw him kill at the, like...
Right.
He's killed, like...
I guess they don't matter.
20, like, intentional targets, and then anyone else is just collateral damage.
Yeah, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Then this woman tells him that someone wants Kabir to work exclusively for them. The room Kabir is in fills with gas and it knocks him out. Meanwhile, back in New Delhi, we see Kavya Luthra, daughter of Colonel Luthra, is getting a medal. Yay! They dance together at the ball after the ceremony, but then Luthra's phone rings and he has to go because India first.
Yep.
Cut to somewhere in the Himalayas, where Kabir wakes up with a bunch of sniper rifles trained on him. Then a call starts with a bunch of people who say that they are Kali. They are representatives of multiple countries, all the countries surrounding India, coincidentally, and they say that they've been testing Kabir's skills. Kabir calls them a terrorist group, but they say they're businessmen. Okay. The representative from India says that if Kabir works with them, he may have a seat at the table one day. Kabir agrees to work with them, and they say that his final assignment before they completely bring him in is behind him. So he turns around and he sees Colonel Luthra gagged and tied to a chair.
Oh no.
Oh no, it's right. The Indian representative tells Kabir to kill Luthra, then the call ends. And Kabir and Luthra stare deep into each other's eyes. There's so much intense eye contact.
There is. There's a lot of gazing.
Which, you know, I guess why wouldn't there be?
No, yeah. The windows
Rithik
to the
soul. Rithik and Hot Dad.
Yeah. Rithik, who is also himself a hot dad.
Yeah, man, so many hot dads.
Hot dads all over this movie.
Does N.T. Ramarao Jr. have kids?
I don't know, but if he does, hot dad.
If he does, hot dad. If he ever will in the future, hot dad.
And if not, hot guy.
Yep. You know, we're all hot here.
We are. Just fanning ourselves. Woo.
Then a flashback to Amsterdam 2 years ago. We see Kabir and Luthra meeting, and Luthra explains that Kali is behind a bunch of different terrorist organizations. Luthra also tells him that some powerful people in India are part of them, and it's believed that their next target will be India.
Mm-hmm.
Luthra says they're impossible to target, so Kabir says that he'll infiltrate them from the inside. Luthra warns him that to do that, he will have to cross every line between good and evil, so he must always remember service before self and India first. I do kind of wonder, like, War One was like this, War Two is like this. I would kind of like to see, like, there's so much talk about, like, Kabir's the perfect soldier because mm-hmm. he always puts India first and it's like service before self and all of that stuff. And I kind of want to see him brush up against that.
I almost felt like War One kind of ends with him making a bit of a selfish decision. Like, he's still going to go and he's still going to, like, do the right thing and help people and take down the bad guys. But, like, he's choosing to do it as a rogue agent so he can work the way he wants to work. And
right.
So then to, like, bring us back into this, like, because I made the same note later on that it's like, this is just so purely the ideology of this whole franchise. And right. I would love to see
patriotism.
I'd love to see there be just a little bit of, like, realistic grappling with that, as opposed to just like, well, everybody who's a good guy is just fine with that.
Right.
I had two things I wanted to say about this scene. One was just that I think the stuff with Kali is really funny, that they're like, the only countries who are involved are the countries that border India. So they're like, India must be their next target. And I was like, well, do the countries who are involved shift every time they have a new target? Like, anyway, that their whole organization makes no sense to me. And then the other thing was just a funny thing I noticed, which is that, like, Rithik is drinking a mug of tea in this scene, or coffee or whatever. And there are, like, three or four times when he, like, lifts up his mug and then, like, puts it down to say something.
Doesn't
and, like, he it. Just, it like, the whole scene, he, like, doesn't take a sip of the coffee. He's just, like, picking up the mug and then putting it back down.
Prop.
Yeah.
That is funny.
Yeah.
I did not notice that, but I like it.
That was very
entertaining. Because, you know, usually I feel like I get distracted by his piercing gaze.
Yes. Yes. Again, the gaze, it'll sweep you off your feet.
It'll get you.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the present, Kabir walks Luthra out along some train tracks, and they're surrounded at a distance by snipers, so they can't get away or anything like that. Kabir says that he won't let Luthra die, but Luthra says that Kabir has successfully infiltrated Kali, and now only he can save India. Luthra says he's a dead man walking anyway, and his death is a small price to pay to save India. And, like, that's another thing. It's like, yes, he's very honorable, but it's also okay to be scared that you're about to die.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
And then they have a few more, like, back and forth words, but then Kabir says, "It's been an honor, sir," and then he shoots Luthra.
Do you think Luthra's actually dead?
I do.
I really thought he was going to turn out to be alive at the end of this movie, and I feel like the fact that he didn't is really what makes me think that he's dead. Like, mm-hmm. I think if he weren't, yeah. they would have teased that already.
I think so. Yeah, I think he's dead. Just as I unfortunately think that Khaled is actually dead.
Yeah, now I do think that that is the case. Yeah, I was hoping maybe not, but it certainly seems that way.
You know, Naina, definitely dead.
Naina's super dead. Super dead, yeah.
But still, you know, it's funny. It's like I say this, and also I would not be surprised if any of them showed up. I'd be like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Well, anything goes in this cinematic universe. Yeah. Like, no rules. All bets are off.
Right. So, yeah, the next morning, the police and some RAW agents are at the crime scene, and so is Kavya. She asks who did it, and someone shows her an anonymous video of the killing, and so she sees that it was Kabir. Mm-hmm. Then we see Kabir arrive at a hangar, where he has another meeting with Kali. But it turns out that the Indian representative is here in person, and it's Gautam Gulati, a billionaire businessman. He tells Kabir that democracy is a failed product, and it's time for a change.
Good to know who exactly we have to blame for the downfall of democracy. It's these people. It's Kali.
Yeah, love that it's in the hands of, like, billionaire businessmen.
Well,
as it should be.
That we knew. It's, yeah, whenever, so the U.S. is also a target of Kali, and so it's the Canada and Mexico, and that's it. That's...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh my god. Gulati then says this is a four-move plan, and the first move was Luthra's death. The second is to put their pawn on the chessboard. Again, we get a lot of pawn talk.
This is not a good analogy, though, because, like, if you're playing chess, your pieces are already on the board. You're not putting it anyway.
Right, and they're moving. Like, I don't know if we were trying to, like, do a callback to War One. I think all the pawn talk really wasn't necessary in this movie.
There were some parts of this movie, and in particular, like, the villain stuff, that I felt like was written by AI. Like, I don't think it actually was, but it sort of had that vibe of, like, write a villainous speech, and then the villain's like, it's not about power, it's about the fact that we want power.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's different.
Nice. So next, there's Luthra's funeral, and Anil Kapoor shows up. He gives his condolences to Kavya and introduces himself as the new RAW chief, Vikrant Kaul. He says he won't spare Luthra's killer, and Kavya says that she wants to be on his team to track down Kabir. One of Luthra's friends, Minister Sarang, is there, and he tells Kaul that neither he nor his team are a match for Kali. He says that only one man is on Kabir's level, and very few people know about him. .. Cut to a big ship with army guys. There are terrorists on another ship nearby, and they can't figure out how to get to that ship. So a guy named Vikram says that he has a plan. And he strips off his shirt and he ditches his weapons so that he can ride what appears to be a missile of some sort.
Yeah,
across the ocean, then lands on the deck of the terrorist ship. And he sneaks down into the ship and proceeds to wreak havoc, first by taking out the on-ship DJ and playing his own music, which is fun, then stealing that guy's clothes and then beating up a bunch of people. I thought that, like, the music thing indicated a kind of playfulness to this, like, character that I thought, oh, that's kind of fun. We're going to see more of that. We didn't really.
Yeah, he's an interesting character where I feel like there are certain ways in which they were trying to make him, like, a little bit, like, fun and not like, goofy, because he's certainly not that, but, like, sort of, like, tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But then he's also supposed to be, like, kind of a cold, heart. Like, I don't think they knew what they were doing exactly with his character. Like, I think
I agree with that.
A few different things were tried and none of them exactly hit. I wrote that he's a showman, if nothing else.
Yes, I do think that's true.
I think he likes a spectacle.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he kills everyone on that boat, which I guess was the goal, and escapes with his army buddies who are on a, like, in a Jeep. I was like, I don't know where this is happening. Was this ship docked?
I don't know.
It was confusing. It doesn't really matter. He did the thing. It was impressive. At Raw headquarters in New Delhi, Kavya and the rest of Kal's team are trying to figure out how to find Kabir. Then Vikram joins them and says that he can help them. Vikram asks, why would Kabir shoot Luthra when he viewed him as a father? So they brainstorm what Kabir's motive could be, and then they debate whether it comes down to ego. And once you kind of know what to look for, you're like, that's weird. Vikram cryptically says, you'd be surprised what a man will do when his ego is hurt. But it's like, okay.
Yeah, like, all right. Make your whole life's mission just revenge on one guy.
Yeah, that's wild.
Pretty a lot.
Mm-hmm. But then Kavya remembers that Kabir adopted Ruhi, so he has a daughter, and they decide that they can use her as leverage. On to Salamanca, Spain. Mm-hmm. I feel like there were even more international locations in this movie.
We were bouncing all over the globe with this one.
All over the place. And I was like, you do know it takes like a couple hours for them. Like, everyone's just like, oh, I'll meet you there. And I'm like, they still have to go to the airport. They have to go through security. Yeah. They have to, like, board the plane. They have to onboard the plane. They have to, like, get their luggage. They have to travel then to where they're meeting. Like, why are we acting like
it's just
effortless?
Yeah, we'll be there in a couple hours. Well, and we know, we've seen Zindagi, and we've seen them fly mm-hmm. from India to Spain.
It's a long, yeah.
Long journey. They're sleeping on that plane.
That's so true. I hadn't even thought about that. So in Salamanca, Ruhi is walking around on a tour when she gets a text saying code red. Kabir gets an earpiece to her and tells her that they're going to lie low for a couple of days. He says to meet him at a cafe, but she's being tailed by various Raw agents. Oh no. Including Kavya and Vikram. Vikram tells Kavya that her vendetta against Kabir is personal and that's good. She should fan those flames.
I actually really liked that scene. I thought it was a good, like, you know, we know what his story ends up being now, but there's a way that he is different from everybody else who we usually are seeing in these movies, and it draws you in. It's like, ooh, okay, that's interesting. Like, I want to know more.
I did like that scene, and also he's very intense.
He is very intense. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily want him as a coworker, but
yeah. And right as Kabir and Ruhi are about to meet, Kabir gets a text from Gulati telling him that Ra is on to him and he should get out.
Mm-hmm.
Kabir then tells Ruhi to get them a car, and when he says that, he means steal one.
Yeah.
Great. Meanwhile, Kabir makes it to the top of the clock tower when he hears a gun cock. It's Kavya! She tells Kabir to say that he didn't do it, meaning the murder of Luthra, but Kabir obviously can't say that, so she realizes he really did. Then she attacks him, and they have a very cool fight. I really enjoyed this fight more than I did the first time around.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun.
I did too, yeah.
So then Ruhi tells Kabir she's 30 seconds away, and so he cartwheels off the clock tower and rappels to the ground to get in the bright red Mini Cooper that Ruhi stole for them.
Great choice.
She could have stolen a much more inconspicuous car.
Yeah.
But no.
Like a nice...
That's what she chose.
Silver sedan.
Yeah, she was literally walking by all these, like, gray, nondescript cars. But no.
But you know, when I was a teenage girl, if my hot stepdad asked me to steal a car, I'd probably also steal a Mini Cooper, so...
That's true. You want to impress him, you know?
God. Let's not dive any further down that path. I didn't have a hot stepdad, guys. I didn't have any stepdad, hot or otherwise.
So as Kabir is driving away, Vikram meets him head on in an alleyway. And Vikram and Kabir make very intense eye contact for a bit. and then it's on. Kabir proceeds to drive backwards away from Vikram, and there's a whole car chase, and now the local police are also chasing after them.
Yes.
Kabir gets them to a bridge and then uses a gadget to set up a rope behind them that catches Vikram's car and flips it. Great. But uh-oh, because now Kabir and Ruhi are trapped on the bridge. We hear the sound of a train, and Ruhi says, "Kabir, don't do it," but he does. So Kabir drives the Mini Cooper off the side of the bridge and onto the train passing under. In the chaos, Ruhi falls out of the car and is dangling from the passenger side door.
Yeah.
Once again, I maintain that this is a wild choice for Kabir to have made.
Yeah, and I have such an issue with how much danger he's putting Ruhi in. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he would have been like, okay, like, thanks for the car, like, I'll come find you later or something. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like he would try to be the decoy to distract them. Like,
yeah, he wouldn't. Yeah.
And like, she comes so close to dying so many times.
Yeah.
And it's his fault. It's not,
right. And it's not really explained why he's okay making those decisions.
Yeah, no.
So Vikram jumps off the bridge onto the train and runs to catch up with where Kabir and Ruhi are. And he saves Ruhi, pulling her back into the car. Kabir then continues to drive the car down the train, but it ends up in the front of the train, like grinding along the tracks.
Uh-huh.
Kabir and Ruhi climb out and scramble to the top of the train, but things aren't looking good because now the train is heading toward a tunnel, and with the car in front of it, the train will of course explode when it hits the tunnel.
Is now, that how that would work?
I don't know, because not to say that Mini Coopers aren't strongly made cars, but this thing is getting like ground along metal tracks right. by a big fast train for like a long time, and yeah. I feel like the integrity of the car would be compromised. And then if the train is going through a tunnel, whatever's left of the Mini Cooper will just break on either side. So I don't know why everyone's like, it's gonna explode.
I know. Yeah, it did seem weird. Like I don't know. I guess the train could, like, get derailed, maybe. But it seems like if that were going to happen, it would have happened when the Mini Cooper, like, fell in front of it.
Yeah, who knows?
I do just, and I know we've already kind of said this, but, like, I just have such an issue with the fact that Kabir is the one who has caused this huge issue. Like, he has endangered not just Ruhi's lives, but all the people on the train. And I'm just, like, his whole thing is that he's, like, the most responsible, most, like, savvy guy. And yet he did this stupid thing. And it feels like the only reason we put it in the movie was because it looked fun.
Right. But it doesn't make any sense for his character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Vikram detaches the rest of the train from the front car, which saves those people. So I hope that there wasn't anyone in the front car, because if so, they did.
They're dead. Yeah. Bye-bye.
And right before the train crashes, Kabir and Ruhi jump into the water. Boom. Big explosion.
Yeah.
Kabir and Ruhi then go to Himachal Pradesh, where they visit Khalid's mother.
Yay.
She says a lot of, like, very, like, patriotic stuff, and she'll do anything for her country.
Yeah, that she's,
and,
like happy her son died. For
Yeah, because, like, Kabir gave him that right.
Yeah.
It did, for me, kind of cross the line into, like, propaganda a little bit.
I agree. Yes, we didn't need for her to say all of this.
Like, we know that she is very, like, pro-India, and she could have just said, you know, I'll do anything for my country.
Yeah.
Done.
Done. I also was thinking about this poor woman who, like, lived for how many years? Like, 2 years, thinking that her son was alive, but really he was a bad guy who had stolen her son's face. Like, did we ever get to find out what her reaction was to all
That's
of that?
Because such a good point.
I think we might have glossed over that.
Also, like, he loved his mom. Like, if it were really him, he would have been seeing her frequently. And I feel like evil Khalid, like, didn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because had he, she probably would have been like, you're not my son.
Right. I feel like you would know as a mom. Like,
oh, man.
Anyway.
That sucks. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, Kabir asks her if Ruhi can stay with her because she'll be in a safe place, and she agrees. And that is the last we see of Ruhi, last mention of her, too.
Yep. He does say mefus. He doesn't use the air quotes, but he did say the word.
Oh, he said mefus.
Yes.
Yes. I was like, I missed that, but that makes sense. I was writing
you were
stuff
too. Yeah,
down.
Yeah.
So Kabir goes to meet with Gulati and thanks him for the heads up about the Raw agents. Gulati then says that not only does he have a friend in Raw, he also has a friend in the cabinet. Gulati gives Kabir his next assignment, which is to try to convince Minister Sarang to join Kali by killing Sarang's brother and his family. They'll be traveling by plane in a few days, and Kabir needs to do it then. Of course, Kabir says yes, because he kind of has to.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see Vikram get a message from Ruhi's Instagram asking to meet up. So they go to Valencia.
Sure.
Why not? Vikram goes to a bar where he meets Kabir. And Vikram asks why they're meeting, and Kabir says that he's giving Vikram the chance to save innocent people. Kabir tells Vikram that Kali is planning to kill Sarang's family, and Vikram has to stop it. And Vikram agrees, and then they dance.
They do indeed.
Yes, and we get, like, the one main dance number of this movie, Janab-e-Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I enjoyed the song more this time around, too.
I did, too, yeah. And I like that it came back at a couple other points through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I found that, like, each time I would hear it in a new context, I was like, okay, yeah, no, this is fun, and it's got a good energy to it. I did definitely notice there were some white ladies who were just kind of bopping, who weren't,
yes,
like, doing the choreography, but were just, like, maybe clapping or other, mm-hmm, sort of. And we could be those white ladies for sure.
We could. I would definitely clap along.
Yeah.
These two men are dancing.
Absolutely.
Great. Love it. Also, it means that we would be in Valencia, Spain.
Which sounds like a nice place to be.
Yeah, it does. But, God, they just keep bopping around from Spain to India, back to Spain.
Maybe Vikram stayed in Spain. Maybe he was like, you know what? I deserve a vacation.
He was in Old Delhi when he got the message.
Oh, okay. So he did just fly back.
He was at his house.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, they are just going back and forth from India to Spain.
Who's paying for this?
Who's paying for Kabir to do it? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't, whatever.
I don't know. But anyway, back to the action. A private plane is flying through the air when four big orbs also fly through the air and attach to the plane. These are a mix of explosives and signal jammers. So Kabir directs the pilot of the private plane to reduce their speed and altitude so that Kali's soldiers can break into the plane. Because Kabir's, like, driving this jet, piloting this jet that's got a bunch of enemy dudes on it. So they drop down onto the plane and they break in, only to encounter Vikram waiting for them in the hold.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Vikram starts fighting all these guys and is doing great, but then he ends up on the top of the plane, hanging on by just his fingers. And that's when Kabir comes down from his jet and helps him. So yeah. Now it's the two of them against the Kali guys. Meanwhile, all the passengers on the plane are sleeping because the flight attendant put sleeping pills in their drinks. So that's easy. Kabir and Vikram enter the cabin of the plane and Vikram kills the flight attendant. And Kabir thinks they've won. Up until Vikram says, what a blessing it is to die in your sleep. And I feel like we're going for, like, the same vibes as War, but we didn't, I don't know, maybe because we were now expecting a twist.
Like,
it didn't hit.
Like the surprise villainy.
Yeah.
Of it. Yeah. I think, you know, it didn't hit because we didn't have as, like, any emotional connection to this guy. Like,
right.
He's just another Raw agent, so it,
yeah,
doesn't really mean anything to us, like, the way it did with Khalid. And I was also,
yeah,
this and other moments throughout the movie made me think about how, like, this is a cinematic universe only in the sense that the characters from the different franchises sometimes reference each other. And
yeah,
sometimes, if you're Salman Khan or Shah Rukh Khan, you show up in each other's movies.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no real world building. There's no, and it's our world, so it's not like fantasy world building, but there's no real, like, common enemy. There's,
right,
no real, like, emotional connection. Like, imagine if we,
yeah,
had met Vikram in another movie and, like, gotten to know him, and then suddenly,
yeah,
this was revealed. Like, that, but that's not what happens. It's just, like,
that would have been better. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think they're necessarily planning beyond the next film.
Right. Yeah, there's no real sense of how it's all going to connect or come together, which is like, okay, then I don't think it, you can call it a cinematic universe. I think it's just...
That's so true.
Movies, which is fine.
Just movies that all exist in the same world.
World, yeah. Yeah, just with some characters who might cross over sometimes. But yeah. I doubt we're ever going to get like an Avengers-style... You know,
no.
Kabir, Pathan, and Tiger all in one movie.
Probably not. But yeah, so Vikram then shoots all of the sleeping passengers. Mm-hmm. And Kabir is shocked, and he's like, oh no, you're in league with Kali. And Vikram says that Kabir is a terrible partner because he doesn't recognize a true friend. He then says it's not Kabir's time to die, and he calls him Kabu. Mm-hmm. And then Vikram pushes Kabir out of the plane with a parachute, and they make eye contact as Kabir falls.
Yes.
And we're all like, what?
Kaboo!
Kaboo! So we come back from intermission, and in the middle of the woods, Kabir reflects on 1999 Mumbai. I'm just saying, we are now making at least Hrithik 10 years younger than his actual age.
Yeah.
At least?
This is what I was thinking about, too, because, at one point, they say that it was 20 years ago. I didn't clock that they said it was 1999. That was more
they
than
did.
10 years ago. But, like, or it was more than 10 years ago. It was more than 20 years ago. But they said 20 years, and then there are other points where, well, basically, yeah, like, they seem to be trying to suggest to us that Hrithik's character is 35.
Yeah.
Which would mean that in war he was 30. And I'm sorry, but I'm 33. And
you don't believe it.
I don't buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those things where I was like, what's the harm in saying he's 40?
Right.
And like, you can still make him younger than he actually is, but...
But you also don't need to. Like, we'll believe that a 50-year-old man can do this stuff because guess what? We're watching a 50-year-old man do this yeah. stuff. Like, we'll buy it. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay for people to play their age. And I also thought it was funny with Kavya because they're trying to say that, like, he and Kavya are the same age. And it's like, they can be different ages. It's okay. Yes, like,
it's fine.
We're all grown ups yeah. here. It's fine.
Whatever. They didn't. I tend to just overlook the age stuff, but sometimes you can't.
I think it's sometimes just funny when it, like, attention gets called to it. And it is yeah. so clearly, like, no, I'm sorry, but no.
Yeah. We're in 1999 Mumbai when Kabir was a teen being beaten up by a group of other boys. And Vikram is hanging out watching this from a rooftop up until all these other boys pull out knives. Then he joins in on the action, beating up all the knife boys with a metal rod. And he also has some brass knuckles.
His weapon of choice.
Mm-hmm, that's his thing. Vikram and Kabir are soon outnumbered, so they take off running. And after they get away, Vikram asks what Kabir is doing on the street looking so high class. Mm-hmm. Kabir starts to talk about his parents dying, and I'm like, well, that's interesting. But Vikram cuts him off as like, oh, that's like a dramatic story. You know, let's just skip to the good stuff. But Kabir asks Vikram to teach him how to live on the streets. Vikram agrees, and this is the start of a beautiful friendship. Mm-hmm. And Vikram says he's going to call Kabir Kabu. And also, Vikram goes by Raghu, so I guess Raghu is his real name.
Yeah.
For the sake of consistency, I'm going to continue calling him Vikram.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a montage of Vikram teaching Kabir how to steal and fight, but eventually Kabir gets caught by the police and Vikram gets away. But their whole thing is like, together forever, no one gets left behind. So Vikram comes back and turns himself in because he can't abandon Kabir. Mm-hmm. So the boys get taken to a juvenile detention center, and they're there for a month before Colonel Luthra shows up asking if these criminal boys want to change things around and earn respect instead.
It feels very problematic to be recruiting, like, juvenile yeah. delinquents from, like, to be in the army. It feels very manipulative to be like, well, your life's going nowhere, so why not join the army?
It is manipulative. I was thinking about this, too. I feel like it's manipulative as long as there's no other option.
Yeah.
Like, if the option is that these boys are going to turn 18 and then they're going to get thrown out on the street with, like, no skills or education or anything, mm-hmm. that's not great. But if there's social programming that we're teaching them different job opportunities and skills to make them like able to get, yeah, jobs and build a life after leaving the juvenile detention center, and the army is just one option among many.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I have to imagine that's it's not what's happening. More the former.
Yeah, it does seem like that. But Kabir and Vikram are into this, and they do their best to impress Luthra during the training camp. And we see Luthra ask them both various questions about being a soldier. And Kabir's answers always have a focus on, like, honor and respect, while Vikram's answers are focused on violence and earning respect through fear.
Uh-huh.
One of these feels a little scarier than the other. At the end of the training camp, Kabir is chosen to go on to become a soldier, and Vikram is not. Vikram asks Luthra why, when he's topped every physical test. And Luthra says that Vikram doesn't know what it means to serve, and so he doesn't understand that India first.
Mm-hmm.
Vikram argues, and I really appreciated this, and I don't know why this theme wasn't examined more throughout the film, but Vikram argues that it's easy for people who get things for free to say that, but he's only survived by putting himself first.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah.
Like, it's privilege.
Exactly, yes.
Kabir begs Luthra to reconsider Vikram, but Luthra says that he'll be back in 6 months when Vikram will have hopefully learned to put India ahead of himself. So Vikram storms away, and Kabir follows him. Vikram accuses Kabir of ditching him as soon as someone gave him a little bit of praise. Also not wrong. And they can't come to an agreement, so Vikram just jumps over the fence of the juvenile home. That CGI of him flying over the fence, I'm like, why?
It's the silliest looking thing ever. And it's like, you didn't need to show us him flying over the fence.
No.
Like, he could have just show us him climbing
over.
Up and then climbing over. It's fine.
yeah, but whatever. Vikram says that he thought he and Kabir would rule India together, but from now on, he'll live by Raghu first. And then he runs away. In the present, we see Vikram watching the press conference about the murders of Minister Sarang's family. Sarang says that it doesn't matter who is killed, India does not negotiate with terrorists. Gulati then calls Vikram and tells him that he was supposed to kill Kabir on that plane. So what happened? And Vikram says that just like Kabir outsmarted Kali, he outsmarted him. But it won't happen again. Gulati asks how Vikram will find Kabir, and Vikram says that Gulati represents Kali for Kabir, mm-hmm. So wherever Gulati is where Kabir will be. But Gulati's like, nah, Kabir won't be able to find me. And Vikram says that once again, he's underestimating Kabir, and Gulati needs to send him the location of the safe house now. We then see a flashback to when Kabir first met with Gulati in the hangar, and he'd activated some sort of tracker while he was there, so he is able to find where Gulati's yacht is.
Mm-hmm.
So Kabir shows up on the yacht and kills a bunch of dudes, and then surprises Gulati right as the members of Kali are signing on for a meeting. So Kali then just talks straight up about the third part of their plan, which is the assassination of the Indian Prime Minister. And then they're like, and then the fourth step, for which our pawn is already in place. And then they're like, hey, Gulati, what do you think? And that's when Kabir reveals himself. And he says that he'll track them all down one by one and kill them. After the meeting, Kabir gives Gulati a choice. Either he shoots him point blank right now, or Gulati can go to Ra and tell them all about Kali. But before Gulati can answer, Kabir gets shot in the shoulder. And oh no, it's Vikram, who's just arrived on a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And Vikram asks why Gulati offered Kabir a spot at the table, but not Vikram.
Mm-hmm.
And Gulati says, well, you know, it's above your pay grade. Like, you just don't have what it takes. And Vikram gets very upset about this, and he shoots Gulati in the head.
Yeah.
Kabir then tells Vikram that he's been looking for him for 20 years and was never able to find him. But Vikram says that he was always there, watching every move that Kabir made. And this is when he's like, I am the darkness, or something, yeah. So Kabir asks what Vikram will do once Kali rules India. Will he become a team player? Because he's kind of the opposite of that right now. And that's when Vikram reveals his plan to single-handedly run Kali. And so Vikram holds a gun to Kabir's head and says he'll miss him. And right as he's about to shoot Kabir, Kabir detonates some explosives he'd planted.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many, like, gadgets. There's so many, like, throwing explosives and buttons to push.
Yeah,
and...
you don't want to mess him up.
No. I guess you wouldn't even want to touch him. Can you imagine you go to hug Kabir and it's like, oh my God, it's
all boom.
And during this distraction, Kabir runs to a speedboat and drives away. But Vikram gets on the radio to his guys and tells them to go after him because he's killed Gulati. And then Vikram gets his own speedboat, and now we also have a boat chase.
Yes. I did think it was funny that this yacht had two speedboats in the same way that the ship in War One had the two sports cars.
Yeah.
And I think just every large vehicle needs two small vehicles for just people to have a chase on. Yeah.
Yeah. Just in case. You never know when you're, whatever mode of movement. Oh, my God. Sorry. I just pictured having, like, a horse with two ponies.
Anytime you're riding a horse, you have to have the two ponies so that if needs must, you can have a chase scene on the two ponies.
Yeah.
That's totally normal horse etiquette.
Uh-huh.
Horse chase etiquette.
Yep. Yep. You heard it here first.
Oh, that's really funny.
It's good. I also am now picturing these specific muscly men on the two ponies. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay. So Vikram and Kabir end up having to swerve away from each other and go in two separate directions, and Vikram drives his boat up a ramp. And at the peak of its jump, he gives it some sort of turbo.
Yeah.
Like Nas. I don't know. I don't know how. I don't know why. I don't know why it lasts so long. But this turbo boost basically helps it fly.
Yeah.
And then it lands on an F1 track in the middle of an F1 race.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And then he drives the boat off another ramp and back into the water. So I'm just like, who was that for? That's wild.
It was just
And also,
for us.
The boat never lost speed?
No, yeah, it just zoomed around. And I don't know. Like, did it have, like, a super strong reinforced bottom? Like, I just...
Right. I actually would have believed it more if he'd pushed a button and little wheels popped
yes!
out.
Yes! Agreed. I think that's the difference, right? Between the, like, this is slightly absurd, but sure, I'll go along with it. And, okay, this is now just so outside the realm of possibility that I can't tolerate it.
Yeah. But it's fine. It's whatever. I mean, it did entertain me. So isn't that what we're here for? So as Vikram drives back into the water, he shoots Kabir in the arm. And Kabir's now been shot in, like, both arms. But it doesn't matter. He's
fine.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
That's why you build so much muscle.
I was just going to say, like, that was definitely a joke we made in War. Like,
that is the neck muscle. Yeah.
Yeah, he has so much muscle that he's bulletproof.
Yeah. If you build enough muscle, the bullets will just hit muscle and nothing important. And you have enough muscles then to compensate for that.
Right.
Fine.
That's how muscles work. They actually, like, swell up inside your body. Like, cocoon your organs. Yeah.
Exactly. Kabir retaliates by using his anchor as a massive grappling gun to hook Vikram's boat and pull it behind his boat. So then Vikram ends up abandoning ship and uses the rope to pull himself toward Kabir in his boat. And this is all happening as the police are moving in. And Kabir makes eye contact with Vikram, then pushes yet another button on his vest, which deploys a parachute, allowing him to float up into the air and fly away. Somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like he'd be floating and the police would be like, there he is. But his boat that he's now abandoned with Vikram holding onto the rope then crashes into the police boats in yet another massive explosion.
Mm-hmm.
In New Delhi at RAW headquarters, Kyle's team is trying to piece together what the heck happened on this yacht. Cal tells Kavya to continue looking through the yacht evidence that they have, and then he tells Vikram, who is here, he's fine, that he's going on security detail for the prime minister at a world conference the next day. Kavya looks through the evidence and finds a ring, which prompts her to go to Cal and say that she can bring Kabir in, but she has to do it alone. And then we get a montage of a flashback back to 15 years ago in Italy, where Kabir and Kavya are clearly in love.
We didn't need this.
No.
If we wanted there to be a significant relationship between these two, it didn't need to be a romantic one. We didn't need a flashback. Like, he can just be her mentor. Like, I feel like it cheapens it to make it this romantic relationship that we have, like, no real context for and is just, like, so just, like, slotted in there.
It felt a bit forced.
Very forced.
Also, I feel like, the timing is weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
These people are not the same age, which is fine, but...
Well, yeah, they're like, this is 15 years ago, and it's like, I'm sorry, I don't believe... 15 years ago that these two people would be in the same point in their lives. Like, sure, they could still be in a romantic relationship, but, like, they're not the same age.
Right. Agreed.
Stop trying to tell me that they are.
But whatever. In this flashback, we see Kabir get a phone call, which he answers by saying, "Sir." So we know who it is. It's Luthra. He goes to find Kavya, but before he can say anything, she goes down on one knee and asks if he'll marry her, giving him the ring. This is the same ring that she finds on the yacht. He says it won't be that easy because he's been assigned to Raw and he's a warrior, and a warrior doesn't get to choose his battles. So he can't marry her. So back to the present, Kavya is back in Rome, which is where she proposed to Kabir, and she meets up with him because, again, he just leaves this ring. And how does he know which day she's going to get to Rome? And, like, the fact that they're there at the same time. A little bit of a plot hole. It's fine. He says he just wants to talk, and he ends up telling her everything. So she says that they need to stop Kali, or Luthra's death will have been in vain. And she tells Kabir as well that Vikram is already in Davos with the prime minister for this conference. And cut to Davos, and we see Vikram meet with all the other heads of Kali in person to, like, welcome him as a new member, and Kali toasts to their own success. Kavya ends up calling Minister Sarang, who she views as, like, an uncle, and says, "Hey, I have Kabir in the car with me. We need to meet." He texts them a meeting place in a parking garage, and they show up only to be ambushed by, like, a ton of guys with guns who drive straight towards them, shooting as they're standing there. None of the bullets hit.
Yeah, no.
But all of Kavya and Kabir's bullets hit, of course.
Right, yeah. Well, Kavya also is fairly, you know, strong and muscular, so probably she's also bulletproof.
Yeah, they were just bouncing off.
Exactly.
So Kabir realizes that, oh my goodness, Sarang is the traitor. Who could have guessed?
Oh no.
I actually didn't. I didn't know.
I didn't either.
That was a surprise. Yeah. I was like, whoa, that's wild. And he sacrificed his own family so that he would be seen as an honorable replacement for the prime minister. Kabir and Kavya are trapped behind a pillar. These bad guys are approaching, still shooting. Oh no, how are they going to get out of this one? And this I was not expecting, which I do appreciate. Because then Cowl rolls up and shoots all the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And I did say, this is the most epic entrance I've ever seen Anil Kapoor make. It was awesome.
It was awesome, but it was only awesome because it was Anil Kapoor. Like, again, it's like this, none of these characters have any real meaning. So, like, you told me early in their movie that this guy maybe couldn't be trusted. And I was like, well, okay. And then now it's like, he can be trusted. And look, he saves the day. And I'm like, well, okay. Like, it just doesn't mean anything. I don't care that much. I also think it's really funny that, like, the surprise keeps being that Kabir is on Ra's side. And I'm like, when are you guys just going to stop doubting his unflinching loyalty to the cause? Like,
right. It's a good point. Like, you can't keep resting on that idea. After these bad guys are dead, Kabir asks if Luthra told Kel about Kali, but Kel says that he was the one who told Luthra about it. And we get a flashback of them discussing their plan. So they kind of knew, and Kel always knew that Kabir was going to infiltrate Kali. So now they try to formulate a plan to save the Prime Minister. And Kabir suggests that they give Vikram exactly what he wants, for him to come first. So they see that one bad guy is still moving, so they get that guy to call Vikram and tell him that it's done, Kabir is dead. And Vikram's like, well, I said one other thing. And this guy says, yes, it was painless. And I was like, that's nice.
I have things to say about his character.
Okay, I'm excited to hear about them. So the day of the conference, the Prime Minister arrives in Davos with Kel behind him. So Vikram goes to, like, get in the car with the Prime Minister, but Kel says, stop, change of plans, we're actually going to put you on Sarang's security detail instead. And then once Vikram and Sarang are alone, Sarang is like, why did this happen? Like, we have this whole plan, why has it changed? And then he gets shot in the forehead.
Yeah.
Curtains. He's gone.
Series rep.
So Sarang's phone rings and Vikram answers it, and Kabir says that it's over for Kali because Sarang was their trump card and now he's dead. He then shoots Vikram strategically so that he will not die.
This was what made me think that maybe Luthra wasn't dead, was the fact that Kabir shot Vikram in this way. But
that's true.
But again, it's like, I think if he were going to come back, they would have brought him back in this movie. Like, I don't think he's gonna come back in another
movie.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. That's probably a good point. But we didn't see Luthra die.
And we saw,
I mean, we saw his dead body.
We saw a body getting zipped up in a body bag. But listen, people swap faces all the time.
That's so true. We're in a world where they have the face swap technology.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
So who knows?
But yeah, okay, so now Vikram is in the ICU and some Kali people enter the room so that he can join a call with the heads of Kali. And they're mad that he failed. So they're like, okay, now you gotta die. And Vikram's like, well, hold up. What if I take care of Kabir so that he is not a problem anymore? Kali is like, okay, we like that. We'll give you 24 hours to do this. So Vikram strides out of the hospital, like just gets out of his hospital bed. Totally fine, I guess. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter that he had a gunshot in his torso. And he calls Kabir to say that they're going to meet and fight, and whoever wins lives, and whoever loses dies. So off Kabir goes. He meets Vikram in an ice cave.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Why not?
But also random. Yeah. Vikram congratulates Kabir for shaking up Kali, and Kabir asks what his plan is now. And Vikram says, well, there's one last move. So he shows Kabir footage of the hangar where the Prime Minister is waiting to board a plane that also has Sarang's body. And then police start shooting at the Prime Minister, but Kel and Kavya are there and able to protect him. Kabir asks Vikram who will replace the Prime Minister, and Vikram says there's always another Sarang. So Kabir launches himself at Vikram, and they fight as Vikram like taunts him about all the people who have died around Kabir. Vikram tells Kabir that he broke his heart, and then he uses his brass knuckles, those are back, to beat the crap out of Kabir. Meanwhile, Kavya is at this hangar, fighting off bad guys who are trying to break into the armored car where the Prime Minister is hiding. And she and Kel are able to get the Prime Minister onto the plane, and Kel lets Kabir know that they're all safe. But Kabir looks into Vikram's eyes, and he realizes that the plane itself is compromised.
Oh no!
So Kel gets all the flight staff off the plane, and Kavya just, like, pulls it out that she can fly it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, she's a trained pilot.
She was a pilot. Like, that was her, that's her
I
thing.
I guess that's
the
true.
Army, so, yeah.
I don't think I'd really put that together.
She was, like, that was her title, was, like, flight something.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Then Vikram and Kabir strip off their jackets and get back to fighting. And then Vikram impales Kabir on a big piece of metal, and Kabir pulls him onto it too.
Yeah.
And trapped together, they stare deeply into each other's eyes.
Very intimate.
Kabir pushes them both off the metal just in time to avoid being killed by falling icicles, but then they start fighting and stabbing each other with the icicles.
Yeah.
Finally, Kabir has Vikram held against the wall, and he's about to punch him in the face when he realizes that Vikram has an icicle lodged in his stomach.
Yeah.
And he's dying.
Yeah.
So Vikram says, "You've won." But Kabir says that Vikram was his hero, and all he wanted was to be him. And he apologizes. He then holds Vikram and tells him that it's not too late to become India's greatest soldier. And he asks him to help him take down Kali. Vikram says that first, Kabir should save his prime minister. So we get this flashback where we see that Vikram had put a bomb in Sarang's body, which is now in the cargo hold of the prime minister's plane. But Kaul is able to drop it out of the plane before it explodes. Yay. And then we see Kabir carry Vikram out of the ice cave. Awesome. Kaul then gives a press conference where he blames the assassination attempt on Kabir and gives recognition to Vikram, who is publicly believed to be deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 9 months later, we're in Moscow, and Kabir is hunting down the Russian leader of Kali. He's walking after this guy down a long hallway, only for Vikram to appear at the other end.
What?
And so they're a team now. We're a team now. As Harleen would say. And we then see these two take down all the other Kali members. Cool. And at the end of it all, Vikram says that the story doesn't end here. And Kabir says there will always be a Kabir, a Tiger, a Pathan, or a Vikram to meet that threat. Finally, Vikram agrees, India first. Yay, you want him over to your side.
Yeah.
Kabir says they'll meet again, and Vikram says that when they do, they'll fight as brothers and as partners. And then they ride their motorcycles into the sun.
Yeah. Into the sun.
I mean, yeah. Not like into the sun, not like a fiery explosion.
That was what I pictured. Because like I feel like that's like the next step for this movie, right? Is like we go into space. Honestly. Like that's where we're headed soon.
Yeah. Not wrong. Then we get one more scene where Kabir meets up with Kavya in the hopes of rekindling their romance and fixing what's broken. Which is nice. I mean, he did still murder her father. Like, I know that they didn't have a choice, but I feel like I'd have a difficult time getting past that.
I would too. Yeah, I would too.
So that scene happens, like, okay. And then we get another scene where Bobby Deal
yes.
is tattooing a child's arm with the symbol of Alpha, the name of his program for the fastest and strongest children. And apparently Alpha is the name of the next movie that we have to look forward to.
Indeed, yes, with Ali Abbat.
Yeah, which I'm pumped for. And, yeah. You know, I like Bobby Deal as well.
Yeah, I think we got more fun stuff to look forward to from this cinematic universe, for sure. I do just think, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, I don't trust Vikram. Like, and I don't trust him.
Me neither.
Not in the sense that I think that they're going to have him continue to be a villain, but in the sense that I don't think they did enough to... I think they did too much to make me see him as a villain. Like,
yeah.
He did too many bad things, and even as a child, he was, like, kind of sadistic, and
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't think I believe that he's good.
Yeah, I don't either, and I wonder, I mean, I'm assuming they would bring him back.
Yeah, and maybe even are, like, trying to set up his own thing.
It felt like a lot of words were said. I mean, I skipped over a lot of what was said in that ice cave as they're fighting and, like,
uh-huh.
Vikram feels like he's dying, but I don't know, none of it really had the emotion behind it that would lead me to believe that he's, like, I've been wrong this entire time and
right.
he's been right.
Yeah, I don't think, it doesn't really seem like there's that moment exactly, and
yeah,
I don't know, it just seems like he's too evil. It seems like he's mm-hmm. he was too far over on the dark side, and again, like, even as a kid, I feel like they were planting these seeds of, like, he's a little bit crazy and a little bit, like, not trustworthy.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see what we do with him in the future, too. I'll keep watching, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if I would exactly say I'm seated, but I'm around.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Research.
Research.
Yes, okay, so I didn't really do research for this week.
Great, this was a long one.
Well, no, I still have stuff to talk about, I'm sorry. Instead of researching something from the movie, there were just a bunch of other interesting stuff going on in, like, the South Asian cinema world and just, like, the world at large that I think mm-hmm. are relevant to us and what we talk about. So there are three different kind of micro topics that I did a little bit more research on. So this is where you, Katie, get to choose. Would you like sports, politics, or entertainment first?
I want politics because we just had an election.
Yes, we did.
You'd be excited to talk about.
Yes. Well, and so that's where we start. So this is U.S. politics, but still relevant to our, you know, our podcast, that Zohran Mamdani was elected the next mayor of New York City. Not the first, but he is the
We've had a few,
but he is the first. I love that the way that this article I was reading phrases it, like, it gets more and more specific, but he's the first Asian, South Asian, Indian, and Muslim mayor of New York City. It's like, you could have just said, like, two of those things, but anyway.
Yes.
I liked the specificity. And he's a democratic socialist, and frankly, like, hearing him talk gives me faith in our country's, like, future and in humanity. But the reason that I'm bringing him up on the podcast is because his mom is a woman named Meera Nair, and she is a filmmaker. And she's a very prolific and celebrated filmmaker, in fact. She's directed several movies that I have had on my list as, like, some, like, things I've been curious to watch, which are Mississippi Masala and Monsoon Wedding. Like,
I've heard of both
titles I have heard of, and things that I had, like, you know, favorited or put on watch lists. So in a 2020 profile by The Juggernaut, Nair says that she wants her work to, quote, rile people up with some degree of responsibility, with some degree of love and irreverence, which I thought was a nice quote about her work.
Yeah.
Her first movie, Salaam Bombay, earned her an Academy Award nomination for Best International Film, one of only a handful of times that India's pick for that category was actually nominated. And that was her first movie when she was in her 30s.
Yeah.
She is also credited for launching the careers of several South Asian actors, including Randi Pooda.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. I needed Randi Pooda in my life.
Of course, we all do. And I really like, she had a quote about her preference, not preference, but her, that she likes casting debut actors. She said, quote, "There's an extraordinary alchemy that happens with newcomers who don't have a shtick, opposite skilled legends who do have a shtick. And both temper each other. If you guide them to some extent, they bring out the best in each other." And I thought that was such a good perspective.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
That's so fun. So, like, he is, like, we've been kind of talking just in the sense that, like, well, he's Indian and, you know.
Yeah. Well, and like, yeah, has, like, you know, like, at his, when he, like, did his acceptance speech, he played Dumachale. Like, you know, he's, yeah.
Yeah, but the fact that his mom is actually, like, in the industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's cool. Okay, so sports and entertainment.
Let's do sports.
Sports, okay. So, the Indian women's cricket team won the World Cup just a few weeks ago. This was their first time ever winning the World Cup in however many 50 years, I think they said, that the Women's World Cup has been running. And India was hosting this year, so they got to win on their home turf.
Oh, that's fun.
And India was having kind of a middling season, like, not terrible, but not amazing. And they went up against Australia in the semifinal. And Australia, they are the defending champs. They won the World Series, the World Cup last year. And they had an undefeated season this year, and I think that the last time they won the World Cup, they were also undefeated, so they hadn't lost a match in a really long time.
And then India came along.
Yes. And also, according to the BBC World Service, either Australia or England had won the World Cup. Like, it was only those two teams who had won ever since the start of it. And neither one was in the semifinal. Australia got beat by India, which was, like, this huge, like, I'm going to say upset just in the sense of, like,
they neither one was in the final.
Neither one was in the final. Right, yes, okay. sorry, yes. Neither one was in the final. India beat Australia and South Africa beat England. So it was...
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was South Africa against India. And India won, which, you know, no one was expecting and... You know, super exciting. And the the content creator who I, like, watched this video from was a white person. And she was like, Hollywood, you should pay attention. You should make a movie about this. And I was like, I mean, yes. And there's also, like, seven or eight other film industries in their home country who could do this, too. But sure, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, like, Chalk to India.
Right. It's very Chalk to India.
Do another one, because I loved that movie.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It was so good.
It's a great movie. There were a bunch of people, a bunch of the people, who, like, Bollywood and other South Asian actors I follow on Instagram who, like, played, like, showed, like, the picture and Chalk to India was playing in the background. Yeah. It was like, yay, we're all very happy. A BBC article by Anisha Ghosh says, quote, many of the players come from India's small towns and have had humble beginnings. These are women whose careers were built playing cricket in village lanes with secondhand bats and seamless balls, and many doubting their ambition because of their gender. Theirs is a legacy that was forged because they kept going when it would have been easier to stop. So again, very storied, very, very cool.
Inspirational.
Very inspirational. And a reporter for the BBC World Service said that this should be a transformational victory for women's cricket in India, which has historically been an underserved team. So
good.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yes.
This is making me feel really good.
I'm so glad.
You know, you win the New York mayoral race, you win the World Cup in cricket.
Yeah.
What else is going to happen? Talk to me about entertainment.
Well, entertainment. So, I did get to go and see Bahubali the Epic in theaters a couple weeks ago. Yes. It was very fun to see it on the big screen. Like, there were moments that had just kind of meant nothing to me when I was, you know, just sort of like, eh, whatever. Yeah. But, like, in particular, the sequence where he climbs the waterfall.
I was thinking about that just now, yeah.
It was very cool. And I was also glad to have the chance to see it in Telugu since we had to either watch a Hindi dub or a non-subtitled version. So it was good to see that. But... I will say I had some critiques. And so they, you know, they mashed the two movies together. It was 3 hours and 45 minutes or so. Wow. So a lot of movie. There was an intermission, which was nice.
A real intermission.
Yes, I was not expecting it, but it was very nice. There was. And oh, actually, that's one thing I was going to mention that I almost forgot about. You remember, like, the first movie ends with the reveal that Katappa kills Bahubali. And so, they show that, like, climactic moment, and then the screen kind of fades, and letters pop up on the screen, WKKB. And then above that pops up, you don't need to wait for 2 years to know. And then why Katappa killed Bahubali. So that was very funny.
Fun.
I appreciated that little tongue-in-cheek moment.
But
mainly what they cut to condense, like, two and a half hour movies into 3 hours and 40 minutes was basically, like, most of the first movie.
Interesting.
Basically, the biggest thing that they cut out is the whole love story with Avantika. So the whole, like, kind of problematic love story, except that they still, like, reference the fact that he, like, teaches her how beautiful she is. Because they, like... I thought it was kind of stupid the way they did it. So they, like, she's obviously the reason he climbs the waterfall. So they show him, like, being guided up the waterfall by her. And then they're just, like, And real quick, let's just summarize what happens. And it's literally like we get a montage, like a 30-second montage with a voiceover saying, and then they fell in love. And then he taught her how beautiful she was. And then,
I hate that.
Like, yeah, it was, and I was like.
So they kept the problematic stuff still. They somehow managed to cut it, but keep it.
But still keep the part of it that was, like, truly infuriating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, like, the movie could have been 5 minutes longer, or we could have cut out, like, some of the battle sequences. We could have shortened those a little bit more and just beefed that up a little bit. Like, surely we could have come up with a better way to, like, nutshell that whole story.
Yeah.
Because it was just so abrupt. That was my main critique. I thought that was kind of sloppily done. They cut Manohari, which is the dance number in the first movie, which is a really fun dance number.
Yeah.
And I was bummed that they cut it, but I also understood, like, for time, you know, that whole kind of weird side quest.
Yeah.
We didn't necessarily need it. And there were some other, like, nitpicky things, but, like, it did overall just give me a greater appreciation for the movie. Like, I, you know, I understood this before, like, why it meant so much to Telugu cinema and to Indian cinema. And I feel like that appreciation has grown for me watching, having seen it in theaters. I'm still not exactly going to call myself a Rajamouli fan, but...
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever call ourselves that.
No, it's hard for me to imagine that. And they did, you know, of course they left in all the, like, racist stuff. And
Yeah.
that we didn't have any problem leaving it, and that was all fine. Yeah.
Interesting. Because that, you really could have made up the time that you needed.
Yeah, like, yeah. We didn't, the whole thing with the tribe, it was like, we could have had less of this, and
I'm glad you went, and I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Oh, actually, one other small piece of Bollywood stuff is that Katrina Kaif and Vicky Kaushal had their baby. They had a baby boy. Very excited. Congratulations to them.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that couple. I love that they exist. They make me happy.
Me too.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah. Any other Bollywood stuff?
No, that's it.
Okay, pluggables. Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood, Instagram, and...
That's the only one.
Yeah, sorry. On Instagram.
My brain was also like, and TikTok. And then I was like, nope, we don't have that one anymore.
Do what you do there. Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could even leave a rating or a review. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah. And join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists. We finally have another song to add. I think we can go ahead and add the song from War 2. It's a good bop.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And if you want to listen along with us there, too, you can find those playlists linked in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts.
Woo. Okay. Next movie.
Yes. Oh, boy. I'm really excited about this one.
I am too.
So we teased this. We talked about this in a previous episode, but I did have the chance to watch the movie Loca, Chapter 1, Chandra. I insisted that it be the next movie we watch because it's awesome and I want to talk about it. And that's
I am really, really excited. I was just looking at the synopsis and I'm like, that sounds awesome. I'm into it.
Yes. I shall read the synopsis. Let us all appreciate the awesomeness. So on IMDb, our plot description is Chandra, a young woman, arrives in Bengaluru with a mission. Her neighbor, Sunny, sets out to unravel the mystery about her, and they are on an unexpected adventure ride together.
Ooh, it feels like there might be a little romance.
Maybe a little romance. Who knows?
Maybe. I guess I'll find out. Loca is available to watch on Hulu. And the synopsis on Hulu is a mythical vigilante in hiding draws three unsuspecting friends into a moral war that threatens to tear the city's dark underworld apart. That sounds juicy.
Yeah, that's more like the action. That's more the, like, that's
yeah.
That's the stuff you come for. Yeah.
I'm excited for all of this. Like, yes. I'm actually really excited. This is quite exciting.
It is. It's a really good movie. I think, I mean, talk about how you set up a cinematic universe. Like, this is how you say, this is the start of something, and it's going to be more. And that's all I'll say in this moment. I can't wait to say more next time.
I'm into it. Amazing. Well, great. So then watch it, enjoy, and until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Bollywood.
And boats and explosions.
Boats that can act like cars.
Yeah, and boats that are exploding. And
yeah.
And wolves, all of those things. We need all of them.
So much. And Mini Coopers, apparently. Mini Coopers on trains.
Yep. Yeah.
That's great.
We'll take it all.